Welcome to Sky Talkers. Here are your hosts, Charlotte and Caitlin.
Hello, and welcome to Sky Talkers. I'm your host, Charlotte.
Hey, everyone. I'm your other host, Caitlin, and welcome to this week's episode all about The Bad Batch Season 3, Episodes 4, A Different Approach, and Episode 5, The Return. I mentioned this last week. You know, this was part of the group of screeners that Charlotte and I got, that I was so excited to talk about these two episodes. And now we're finally here. And I hope it lived up to our semi-hype because I think these episodes were just fantastic. And I'm really excited to talk about them.
They're so good. The season is the Bad Batch is so good. Caitlin and I have been doing a lot of reflecting about the Bad Batch the past couple days. And every episode is a banger. Like, it really is crazy. Yes. So very excited to talk about these two episodes. Also, thank you so much for the kind words about our new theme music. I hope if this is your first time listening, that's brand new theme music. So I'm so glad that you guys like it. We love it too. And we are just in awe of Christy Carew's talent. So we're very, very happy to be working with her and to have her music as our beginning theme. And end theme.
Yes, we're really excited. And like Charlotte said, thank you so much for all of your kind words on the new theme music. It was really fun to roll it out and see what you guys thought. So yes, thank you so much. But that's really kind of all the housekeeping we have at the start of the show. Are we ready to dive in?
Let's dive in. Let's go for it. Let's talk about episode 4, A Different Approach.
Okay, so this episode, A Different Approach, was directed by Saul Ruiz, and it was written by Ezra Nachman, who Ezra has written before on The Bad Batch. He wrote The Clone Conspiracy from season 2, which I think was one of our favorite episodes from season 2. It's the episode with Chuchi and Rex and the assassin clones, when everything is kind of starting to go down at the Senate. And I remember talking about him being the writer on that episode because obviously his name is Ezra and this is Star Wars we're talking about. So it was exciting to see him back. And this episode aired on February 28th. So last week, not only was it so fun to see Omega and Crosshair really be on this adventure together about how to get money, about how to contact Omega, Hunter and Wrecker, and just kind of really explore their dynamic together. And of course, what we'll talk about, the ending was absolutely stunning, so emotional, just a great moment of the show, of the series.
I love the vibes between Crosshair and Omega. I love the dynamic of the grumpy tall man and the small confident girl. I just think that dynamic is so fun and so fun to explore. And I know the writers are just having a great time exploring all of that. One of my favorite moments was when they changed, when Omega got them new clothes and they had to shed their clothes and get a new outfit. And Omega was like, "Isn't this better?" And right away, like without missing a beat, Crosshair goes, "No." It's so perfect. It was better.
It was a lot better. Yeah. that was really funny. I also loved when Omega is trying to bribe the transport attendant and it doesn't work. And they're walking away and Crosshair goes, "Well, that went well." And Omega, so grumpy, just goes, "Oh, stow it." So funny. But since we're here at kind of the beginning of the episode with our general feelings, let's talk about the title. One of our favorite things. This episode was called A Different Approach. And I think this was such an apt title because for me, what I think there's the literal kind of interpretation of it, that they had to find a different way to contact Hunter and Wrecker, a different way even on that planet to get money, to get credits, to bribe the transport attendant, you know, all of those things kind of started steering them in different directions. And I think we also get the dynamic of like Omega's way versus Crosshair's way of dealing with situations. And they kind of talk about that, right? When Crosshair at the end of the episode gets to finally do his shootout. And I think he even says, "Finally."
Yeah.
But I think for me, what I was kind of taking away from the title is really the exploration, like we're talking about, of Crosshair and Omega's relationship and their dynamic. And to me, it was a clear contrast between Omega and Hunter. And I found myself all throughout the episode thinking about how Crosshair really just kind of lets Omega take the lead, do what she wants. He's going to follow her plan. Whereas that was never Hunter's path. Hunter would never immediately allow Omega to just sit down and start hustling the people in that bar for money. And Crosshair is like, "All right, let's let's go. You know, I think so. To me, I was seeing also a different approach to Crosshair versus Hunter's way of being with Omega in these kind of more dangerous situations. Hunter was definitely the more protective one, the more father-like one, I would say. Whereas Crosshair, even though he's referred to as her dad, right? Someone thinks he's her dad in this episode. He is like, all right, like, we'll try it your way until we can't take that road any longer. And I think we kind of saw that too with the escape from Tantus.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it, to me, demonstrates that Crosshair, at least in the previous episode to this and the episode before that too, it feels like Crosshair has exhausted all options, right? I mean, mm-hmm. he left his brothers in the very beginning of the series, and then at the end of the last season, he left the Empire, and then he was imprisoned, right? And so I feel like, while, yes, we can compare Crosshair to Hunter in this moment where Hunter would never really let Omega take the full lead of a plan, I feel like Crosshair is in this level of, I just kind of have to figure it out now because I have no, like, where's my loyalty? I guess my, exactly, like my, if Crosshair really is all about loyalty, his loyalty right now is to Omega, what, no matter what side that is on, honestly. And mm-hmm. I feel like he just realized that now, this is his option, I guess.
I think we'll see that loyalty component really come to the forefront in the next episode, which of course is like our very angsty relationship episode on the Planet of the Outposts, where I think we really see what you're talking about as far as like Omega, Crosshair's loyalty to Omega.
Yeah, totally.
I think that we've been talking a lot the past couple weeks and throughout the Bad Batch about Nala Se's relationship with Omega and kind of what it means. What were you getting out of this conversation between Hemlock and Nala Se?
Yeah, I think there was a lot there. In the very beginning of A Different Approach, we see Hemlock and Nala Se, Hemlock really interrogating Nala Se, and Nala Se coming back with a lot of cryptic answers about Omega, about how perhaps her data was erroneous and not true. But obviously Hemlock knows that's a lie. But I was thinking about that scene, and I was thinking about how immediately I think that Nala Se was super protective over Omega throughout these seasons, honestly. But I am trying to figure out what that actually means and whether or not there's a selfish component to that, or if we, I just am trying to trace back. Was Nala Se protective over Omega because she had been experimented on, or was Nala Se the one that was experimenting on her? And then I'm continuously thinking about all the questions that we all have about Omega's origins. And I was just checking my emotions about being like, oh, I'm so on Nala Se's side, and wondering if I'm just not even seeing the full picture, because these are people who, like the cloners of Kamino, I don't know, they're really good cloners, but they, like what Dex says, right? But
they're,
I feel
really
like they
good.
Are, well, that's what Dex
I
says,
know,
right?
It's just
damn
funny.
Good ones.
It's like, funny how you said it, like, they're really good at their job.
Well, it's just, I think that, you know, they're all about like science. And I just don't know what happened to Omega to get her to where she has a super high M count or a transferred M count. We've talked about this in our last podcast.
But yeah.
Yeah. And I just don't know what that actually means for Nala Se's doing within it. It's just interesting to think about.
I think it's kind of both of what you were saying as far as Nala Se experimenting on Omega in the past versus doesn't want her to be experimented on now. I feel like Nala Se must know what it is about Omega that makes her special. So she must have known about that either when Omega was created, like when she was initially cloned, or after she was, I guess, born as a young child when she was working with Nala, a younger child when she was working with Nala Se on Kamino. So I feel like she must have the answer, because she already knew on Tantus that Omega shouldn't have her blood tested. So I think she already knows what it is about Omega that makes her special. And that is,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But was she the one that did it?
I think so.
Yeah.
That's what
and
I would say.
Did she, was she experimenting, or did she have an ulterior motive that could have been similar to Hemlock?
You know what I'm thinking now? I'm thinking that perhaps, maybe not a direct one-to-one, but I'm thinking a little bit about Galen Erso and the Death Star and how he mm-hmm. kind of forced to create it and then you know, obviously sent the plans to Jin and the rebellion to destroy his creation. I don't know if it's exactly one-to-one with Nala Se being forced to do her experimentation on Tantus, certainly, but maybe back on Kamino, I think maybe she had a different relationship to her scientific experiments back then. And then maybe, you know, after creating and or experimenting on Omega, she realized she didn't want to do that anymore. It wasn't worth it. Fill in the blank, you know what I mean? And so then it became a, you know, I'm not going to let you, even though I'm the one that created Omega for, you know, this purpose, I'm not going to aid in actually having her be experimented on and what the implications are, which I think we know is creating force sensitive people.
Right, right. I don't know. I guess just to top that all off, I just think that I'm intrigued to continue to watch this relationship, I guess, with Hemlock and Nala Se, mm-hmm. and what comes out about Omega's origins.
Yeah.
Because in these two episodes, we didn't really find out anything new about Omega and the M count of it all. And I think we're like going to be strung along for a while about that. Mm-hmm. And I'm just waiting for more to come out about that. And I think once we do, we're going to figure out what actually happened on Kamino when she was the assistant, when she was the first one of the Bad Batch to be created. There's a lot there that makes Omega so interesting and her history so interesting. And Nala Se, I think, is the key to figuring all that out.
Yeah, I think Star Wars released another teaser trailer for the Bad Batch. And there's a line in there of Omega saying, what does she say? Something along the lines of, what am I? Yeah. We don't know who she's talking to or where she is, but she does say, or maybe she says something like, I need to know what I am.
Yeah.
It's something like
exactly.
that.
It's that.
Yeah. So I imagine this is going to tie into our conversation we're having right now.
Right. And I think that leads to the next thing I wanted to bring up, which is in both of these episodes, in episodes 4 and 5, we have this new story thread of Omega wanting to return back to Tantus, which they escaped. They're out of there, but they're is this pull that Omega feels about helping the other clones, which I think has been a through line throughout the whole series, but I just actually never really expected it to come back to this. And I guess it makes sense because Tantus is such an interesting location. They really worked really hard on those storyboards. Like, you can tell it's a really good planet. You know what I mean? You can always tell when you're like, oh, well, this isn't the last we're going to see of this planet because it's designed super well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Omega, she brings it up and then Crosshair immediately goes, we are not going back. And I don't know. I smell a character arc. It feels like there's a sense that Crosshair being adamant here that we're not going back might end with eventually Crosshair being adamant that we have the ability to go back and we should do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I didn't think about this and I wanted to speculate this with you a little bit because I don't know why we didn't think about this before, but we talk about it. Do we think this series is going to end with a rebellion or a riot or something on Tantus?
Yeah, I do. I think because it is something Omega has brought up a couple of times now. I think also thinking about the episode titles, which we've seen for the whole season. What is it? The finale is called like The Calvary Arrives or Has Arrived.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that feels very like where have they arrived to? Feels like Tantus. Yeah. Feels like they're going to free the clones there.
Oh, my God. The episode 14 is called Flash Strike.
Yes. Yes.
And then episode 13 is called Into the Breach.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I think that's where we're going.
Yeah, I think it, you know, I've been thinking a lot about the end of this series, and Michelle Ong had actually talked a little bit about this in the roundtables we did. I'm not going to say what she said because I think it wasn't a spoiler, but it felt a little, I don't know. I'm just not going to say what she said. You can go and listen to it if you want to. But it's made me think a lot about the series and kind of Star Wars stories as a whole and how I think the lesson we learned with Rebels, with the Rebels finale is that, and I think it's our best example that we have, is that these things, these finales, the stories of these Rebels, of these characters, that their impact is not necessarily going to be galaxy-wide in the way that the Death Star is. And I don't mean that negatively. I mean that in like kind of a realistic way. of it's all of these small things that people are doing throughout the galaxy, these quote unquote smaller victories that lead to the Empire eventually being destroyed in the end. And I wish I could pull up Nemec's speech from Andor, but basically about like the smaller waves and like rebellions building individually on all of these planets and places across the galaxy. And so when thinking about the end of the Bad Batch, this idea that they have to go out and do this huge thing, I think is kind of unrealistic. So the idea that it could end with, like, they're not going to free all the clones, right? But if they can free the clones of Tantiss, that can actually be enough. That can be enough, I think, for a finale and of seeing our group, like, have this success. And we've talked about this a ton, but this purpose and what they're going to do next. And it's not all the clones, but it's some of the clones. And that can be enough. That can... that doesn't win the war, but it wins the day, kind of a thing. In the same way that I think, like, with Rebels, it was just, it ended with them freeing Lothal, and like that was enough. And look at where Lothal ended up in the Ahsoka show, right? Like that ended up being enough for that group and that team. And they all still went their separate ways, but for the story of Rebels, it was ultimately about this one planet and how that mattered in the end. And so I think thinking about the end of Bad Batch, it could just be ultimately leading to Tantiss. And I don't mean that like it's only going to Tantiss. I mean that, like, wow, it's going to Tantiss and they're going to destroy this facility. And that will have ripple effects on what the Empire is able to do as far as their cloning and experimentation. But it still leaves room for them to continue to go save other clones, like what Rex and Echo are doing. And this is obviously something Omega feels really strongly about. So I do think we're going to end up back on Tantiss. I think that will be the finale of them freeing the clones on Tantiss.
Yeah. I think that in this particular episode that we're talking about, what we actually have in the structure of it is in the end when Crosshair finally gets to take control over the plan, basically, and shots are fired, animals are let loose. It's sort of pandemonium and they get their way, they get off the planet. And I sort of wonder if this will be able in the finale or the episodes leading up to the finale, we'll be able to look back on this one and think, oh, this is the precursor to when Crosshair and Omega sort of together realized that they could both lead this or figure this out. Because it's personal for Crosshair and for Omega. It's less personal for Hunter and Wrecker because they weren't there. So I think, I don't know. I think it'll be really interesting.
I think that's a good point about it being personal for Crosshair and Omega in a way that it isn't for Hunter and Wrecker, just simply because they haven't been there to actually see it. And I think this is something I wanted to talk about in the next episode, but maybe just talk about it now since we're here. But I think that the idea or the dynamic between the Bad Batch and the Regs has always been an interesting one. It came up a lot in the Bad Batch arc of the Clone Wars, and then also in the first episodes of the Bad Batch in season one, right? There was always clearly a divide between the Regs and the Bad Batch, and they were not great to each other. They didn't think highly of each other at any time. And I think that the Bad Batch have always seen themselves as different and, you know, better in some cases, and that they were not the same. They're not Regs. They, you know, do things their own way. That's what makes them special, makes them better, things like that. And I think that throughout this series, like through people like Rex and Echo, they've come to this realization of, you know, the Empire sees us all as property. There is no difference in all of us now. And I think that Crosshair really kind of learned that himself as with his experience on during the episode The Outpost with a character like Mayday and kind of everything that happened there, which we'll talk about. And I think goes back to that it feeling more personal for him because he had this experience there at the Outpost and then also on Tantiss. And it's clear in the episode The Return that he still feels emotional about what happened at the Outpost with the other clones there in like that wonderfully angsty scene of him picking up the helmets and like from the ground and putting them in, you know, like more respectful, I guess, on that shipping container or whatever. And, you know, so I think that's a good point about it being more personal for the two of them, because I think for Crosshair specifically, he's realized that, you know, it is he thought he knew what he was getting into. He thought he was this important person in the Empire. But to the Empire, he's just a rag. And all of the rags, all of the clones are impacted by what the Empire is doing now. It's not just, you know, in season one of The Bad Batch, I think it was an us versus them kind of mentality. And I think they're all kind of realizing that it's not that way anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I was just thinking about, you said it's all of the clones, and I wonder, are there more people than just clones in Tantus II that are being experimented on? Am I wrong about that?
I'm sure there are. I don't know if we've seen them specifically. We know there are creatures like the Zillabee.
Yeah, that's sort of what I was getting at. Yeah. Just again to parallel this sequence that we're seeing
with the animals,
in this one with all the animals,
yeah,
and then knowing that there are animals, Zillabees, on Tantus. And wondering how that's going to look. Like, I don't know. My brain's just kind of going a little bit with thinking about the parallel, because what the heck were we doing with all these animals in this episode anyway?
Right?
Like, it's definitely, it's not as heartwarming as it is, right? Yeah. As it feels like, right? Because these animals, I think once they're free, there's a feeling of like, oh my God, we got out.
What next?
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I did this in every single podcast, and I'm so sorry, but there is another Jurassic Park parallel that, first off, like when the boxes themselves that these animals are being transported in is so similar to Jurassic Park and the way the velociraptors are transported in. But I just this deliberate linking between creatures that are science experiments,
mm-hmm.
I just keep going back to, because it's, or is that what we're leading to? I also could have completely missed a line about what this guy that Omega did the card bet with is dealing with. I don't know, but I feel like there is a linkage there a little bit about the Empire experimenting on animals.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those things where it's just all these little threads that are, you know, sometimes in the background, sometimes more at the forefront, but it's all connected ultimately to what the Empire is doing in the galaxy at this time. I didn't mention this in our last episode on The Bad Batch, but I did just want to call out Omega having a little lunchbox, because she kind of continues to have a little lunchbox in this episode too, where she keeps all their money. And while she was on Tantus, it was like she had like a 9-to-5 and she had her chicken nuggets in her lunchbox every day. I don't know. I just found something about this detail of her outfit really cute. And she kind of continues to have this little,
she needs a purse,
like a backpack. Like, I don't know. She's got to have her hands free. And yeah, I enjoyed that aspect across all of the episodes so far. And also the fact that I felt like I was really kind of doing the mental math with Omega and Crosshair throughout this episode of how many credits, how many they're spending, all
yes.
these people that are
yes.
blackmailing them. I was like, are they going to have enough?
And then it ended up not mattering.
Yeah, of course it didn't. Yeah, they were never going to pay that.
I was doing the math too. I'm like, wait, okay, so they do have enough when that guy scammed them.
Yeah.
And then it didn't matter. And of course it didn't. But I was also keeping a tally in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I felt like Crosshair was too. At one point I was thinking, how are they going to make more money? Because I think they're out. Or they're running
right.
low. Okay, but who do you think is teaching Omega how to bribe people and also count cards?
Counting cards is Fee.
Yes. I also kind of think that Tech would have also taught Omega how to count cards. I feel like Fee and Tech, it would have been a fun tag team lesson, because obviously the math side would have been something that Tech was interested in. And then Fee, you know, of course, in her adventures, probably has to do that a couple of times.
Okay, so let's talk about the ending.
Okay.
Okay, it's so beautiful. First off, let's just say that this is the same planet that they met Hera on a couple seasons ago.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I didn't realize
Star Wars
that.
Confirmed that. And I thought
oh,
that was
cool.
really...
Yeah.
But this final sequence is just the best ever. I think the music, the atmosphere, the lighting... One thing I wanted to say about the lighting before we even get going is there was such with the way that the shot of both the ships on either side on this planet meeting with the skiffs down and the light coming from inside of the ship, something that really struck me about it was very clear to me that we were looking at two equal sides
mm-hmm.
with the same light coming down from their ships. It's not different lighting at all. They are both on equal footing on opposite sides, but not opposite sides of war. These are two parties that are meeting that are happy to be meeting, or should be happy to be meeting, because they're the lighting expressed that they are coming to each other in warm, good light, right? And I just thought it was so interesting. Like, even when Omega and Hunter reunite, like, the lighting on each of their faces is warm and glowy, which is a lighting scheme that we haven't really seen since the beginning of the season at all with any of them. It's like these are people who are meant to be together. And the lighting is evoking that.
Yeah, it really is. I think that it was just a stunning set piece, and the way that it was directed was just absolutely beautiful. Definitely teared up. And the Wrecker and Omega hug, talking about crossing the galaxy for her. And I really loved that they pointed out that it was Omega who found them. I just think we've been tracking so much with Omega over the series of her independence and her abilities and things like that. And the fact that it was her who found them, I think is just so special. Honestly, we talked last week about how, you know, in a similar vein, that it was Omega who escaped. It wasn't Hunter and Wrecker who rescued her. She escaped. And in this episode, she's the one that found them. She's the one that contacted them. And we even have the great scene of Crosshair, you know, kind of trying to be really gentle with Omega about the fact that they might not actually be there, that, you know, it's been a bunch of months.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows what's happened? And I think we see this in the next episode too, but of Crosshair being very in tune with Omega's emotions about what's going on. Like, he kind of comments on things to her without her saying anything. But I thought that was a really great moment with him and her before they arrive on the planet. But just the hugs were so good. And the music was just, it was so emotional. And the way that it switches once Omega tells Hunter that she had help and that Crosshair steps out of the transport ship, you can just tell that everything is different. And even the way that they end the episode of Crosshair standing by himself, when I was watching it the first time, I almost wondered if, like, the moment was going to linger and Omega was going to, like, go over and bring Crosshair to the other side. But I like how it ended, of it still the three of them on one side and Crosshair on the other. They haven't, you know, breached the divide quite yet, or Crosshair hasn't. And I don't know, I thought it was such a stunning ending, and I was really thinking about it a lot and just how emotional it was. And Charlotte mentioned at the top of the show that we've been doing a lot of reflecting on the Bad Batch over the past couple of days. And these people, these characters have just come so far, and to finally have them back together, it was like, this is the moment we've literally all been waiting for years, for Crosshair to be back with them. And I think we certainly speculated that it could go another way. This is obviously the way we wanted it to go. And now we're finally here. And it was such a beautiful moment of reunion. And Hunter saying, "We never stop searching," like, oh my God, it was,
I know,
so much.
I also want to say, as much as it was a beautiful reunion, I think that it was a smart move to end the episode on Hunter and Wrecker's faces being a little concerned, wary,
hesitant,
nervous, hesitant. It's a good cliffhanger. Yeah. Obviously, we have the next episodes. We have a follow-up already, and we know that they're together. They're working things out and everything. But I think that was necessary, because if they went up to Crosshair and were like, "It's good to see you, brother," like, I just don't think that would have hit the same, because I think that we need a conversation, which we get in The Return, some fighting. Like, I don't know. We need to feel that tension. And I'm really glad with the choice that they made with this.
Yeah, I am too. Because you remember the last time they all actually saw each other was the season one finale, which we're actually going to talk a little bit about that in the next, when we're talking about The Return. But there was a ton of tension in the season one finale between all of them. And Hunter and Wrecker and Tech at the time were saying to Crosshair, "You can still come with us." And Wrecker even said, I think about this line a lot because I think Wrecker is so sad when he says it, but he says, "You didn't even try to come back. We would have taken you, but you didn't even try." And I just think that's so sad to hear that from Brecker. Mm. And at the end of that, of the finale of season one, they still offer Crosshair the chance to come with them on the Marauder. And Crosshair chooses to stay abandoned on the destroyed planet with no comms rather than go with them. And so you think about how that was the last time that they all saw each other. So, of course, it makes sense. And it's good that they obviously did this to have that tension in this ending. And the music, too, has a little bit, right? It's so sweet and pure when it's like Wrecker and Omega and Hunter. And then it transitions into something a little bit more ominous as
with the strings.
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
It's great. It's so good as the episode ends. Because, yeah, who knows what they're going to say to one another. I mean, we do now, but like, who knew when the episode ended? All right.
Yeah.
Should we get into the return though?
Yes. So episode 5 is called The Return. It's directed by Nate Villanueva and it was written by Amanda Rose Munoz. It aired today, March 6, 2024. So what'd you think, Caitlin?
You know, I loved it. We are back on Papu.
Yeah. This is probably my favorite episode so far.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of perfect. I think it's a 10 out of 10.
It really is. I mean, we got Pabu and the Outpost in the same episode.
I've seen some people on Twitter call it fan, like affectionately, it's like fan fiction come to life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it really hits on all that. You know, I agree. We get kind of everything that we want.
We're really getting it all.
Yeah. We're answering a lot of questions and the angst is next level, actual real conversations about the mm-hmm. past and relationships. I mean, this is where Star Wars
it's firing just, on all cylinders.
All cylinders. Yes. Like, it's just so good.
It's really good. Omega finally back with the real deal, Lula. Just feels right, feels good, feels organic.
Totally. And also her taking a beautiful nap in her room. The sun.
Yeah.
In a warm glow. I mean, it's just like everything is right with the world. On Pabu, where it's just like glowy and warm and everything's like the best. And
the best.
It's just, I don't know. Except for, and Crosshair is obviously staying with them, but is distant and practicing his shooting. His hand's all shaky. But he's still, like, he's just figuring it all out. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. I love this little morning sequence of, like, Shep and Liana. They're bringing, like, snacks to the crew now that Omega is back. I wish we had seen them because they were great characters. And, you know, Liana was, like, a little friend for Omega. But maybe we'll see them later in the season. And the fact that they found Crosshair, too, I think is funny. What does he say? Crosshair's like, it was uncanny how they found me. It was funny. And then, you know, Hunter and Wrecker are like drinking their coffee like a couple of dads waiting for their kid to get up in the morning. I don't know. It was really pure. And obviously there's a bit of that tension that we're talking about, the fact that Crosshair isn't there in the morning. And Omega, of course, immediately goes, I'll go talk to him, and just, you know, marches off to the beach to knock some sense into him. And she tells him, you can't keep hiding. You need to talk to Hunter. And I love in this episode how, I don't know, we'll talk about this once we get to the actual Outpost portion, but Crosshair really, I don't know, I feel like he's so honest with Omega about how he's feeling, or kind of the hurt that he's feeling of, well, it's them who don't trust me kind of thing. And the way that she's the only one he's really talking to, even when they're later when they're having dinner, he's sitting next to Omega, right? At the end of the table. He's not sitting next to anyone else. It's Omega.
Yeah, yeah. And you commented about this. The table is so nice.
Oh my God. It's like a raw edge wood table, completely natural. Incredible. Must have cost a fortune. Probably not on Pabu, but if you had it here.
No, on Pabu, everything's
like $2.
Cheap. Yeah. And it's just like a beautiful way of life.
Yeah.
You know, like
it's so good. But this dinner scene, though, is the first time that we've had a tech mention, right?
Right. Right. Well, not really. I mean, well, did we have one in the first three episodes?
I'm kind of second guessing. I don't think we did.
I can't say that for sure. I'm going to be honest.
I can't. I think this is the first time we've had a tech mention, because
like a straight up tech mention.
Yeah, because
perhaps.
Echo right here, he says, he points out what, you know, the problem with, one of the problems, obviously, with tech no longer being here is that with the data pad, he's the one that would have been able to hack the data pad, and they can't mm-hmm. do that without him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like this is going to come up a lot, mm-hmm. honestly, about not having that skill set
yeah.
around. Also, there was an empty chair at the table. I mean, it's really sad.
It's so sad. I think the fact that there was this kind of pause after they mentioned tech, I thought was really well done. Something I'm still like a little disappointed in is that we didn't get to see Omega tell Crosshair what happened yeah. to tech.
It just feels like a miss.
Yeah, it does kind of feel like a missed opportunity, but I think we feel it here. Crosshair like also hangs his head and clearly looks very sad. But it is the opportunity when Crosshair is able to offer up something useful about mm-hmm. where they can plug in Nalase's data pad, which ends mm-hmm. up being, you know, the outpost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when we go to the outpost, we are immediately greeted with the circling bird. We need to talk about the bird. So the bird is back, the circling bird.
He's back.
And we talked about this extensively when the Outpost episode in season 2 aired. And we talked about what the bird represents. And I think overall, it's in literature, as they say. We talked a lot about the vulture and vultures circling overhead, circling the dead, waiting for their moment to strike. But I think more so in this episode, and we did talk about this previously, but potentially this bird representing some of Crosshair's own guilt, his frustrations, and just like something watching over him,
like an
I guess,
omen
with
too.
All his yes, definitely. In The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, the albatross circles overhead on the ship, constantly reminding them of death and frustrations and anger. And I just think it's very similar. It's exactly what we're getting here mm-hmm. in this particular episode on this planet. And just the fact that it's back, it's like, yes, this is what we're going to be dealing with. We're going to be dealing with guilt and things that need to be uncovered. And I think we have an example of two creatures, two animals, exemplifying how Crosshair and Hunter need to talk to each other. And there's a lot of things that need to be let go, because at the end of it, the vulture, the bird, flies away and is gone and is no longer circling above. And that second creature that I think we should talk about in terms of what it means is the ice worm, the ice monster. I think it's really funny when Wrecker says, "Why is there always a huge monster?" Because I feel like we felt that a lot. Like I felt that in my bones, right? About sometimes
a lot of
Star
monsters.
Wars animation can feel like Monster of the Week. And it's fine. It's just, yeah, it's true, Wrecker. Why is there always a huge monster? But I was thinking a lot about what does the ice worm represent for Crosshair and Hunter's relationship. And I think it's sort of obvious that there's a lot of things below the surface that need to come out the top and they need to be addressed. And a lot of secrets that need to, like Crosshair's own guilt about what happened at the outpost and all the things that Hunter feels towards Crosshair about being basically jealous of the fact that Omega feels a certain type of way towards Crosshair and him like not really knowing how to deal with those fatherly feelings. And I think once they work together, right, there's a moment where Hunter's below trying to suss out where the worm is and Crosshair is above.
With
and
Batcher.
With Batcher, yes, correct. Batcher's there. And I think when they both get to the surface and they get behind the sensor and the worm, you know, retreats, I think there's this realization that they need to lay it all out and they're in a place that's safe now, that they have the sensor activated, that there's no threat of danger, that they just really need to talk. And we get that. We get an amazing conversation between the two. And we desperately needed that. But I think that we have, I just wanted to call attention to these two animals that really sort of underscore all of these emotions that these two characters in particular are feeling.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, whenever we come back to a similar place, I think it's worth asking the question of what is it about this planet here that we that the writers felt that it was necessary to come back here rather than, you know, some new planet that we could explore. And I think that the choice to come back here, I wish I knew the actual name of this planet. I just keep saying the outpost.
I kind of think it's just the outpost, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
Well, that's what we'll be calling it here on Sky Talkers.
It is the outpost.
Yeah.
It's icy and it's the outpost.
That episode is obviously one of, I think, the standouts from season two, but this was the turning point for Crosshair in his journey with the Empire. It was his turn, his rebirth, his redemption, like whatever you want to call it. It was the moment where everything changed for him. And I think also, I think you would put this, but it's like a great source of trauma, this place of what happened to him here and the things that happened to like Mayday and the other clones. And I think that's kind of what I was talking about earlier of like Crosshair's relationship with the Regs and of seeing what happened to them here at the outpost and his relationship with Mayday was so beautiful and so tragic. And everything that happened to Crosshair after that is a direct result of what happened here at the outpost. And now that he like actively took the Bad Batch back here, I think it is again a moment to a turning point for Crosshair's relationship with the rest of the Bad Batch, particularly Hunter, because Wrecker says earlier in the episode that he trusts Crosshair because Omega trusts him. So it's all good for Wrecker, which is just, it's so great. And one of the many reasons why I love Wrecker. I guess I'll also just say here the fact that we get a group hug between the three of them at the end. Can't be topped.
Again, fan fiction in the best way. It's like we got it. We got a great conversation. We got an epic battle. We got a return to a traumatic event. Like we got symbolism in the animals. Literally, like, are you kidding me?
Ticked every single box. Real box. Yeah. And the fact that, and I think to your point about the role of the animals in this episode, also a good reason to come back here to the outpost. I think particularly with the Ice Vulture. And one thing I love about the Ice Vulture is that Crosshair is aware of the Vulture. He also like looks up at the Vulture a number of times in the original Outpost episode of season two, but we really see him watching the Vulture both when right before he has his first argument with Hunter and then also at the end when the Vulture flies away. And it does feel like
he's aware of his guilt.
Exactly. And like this planet kind of embodies all of that, the guilt and the turn. And now it's also going to embody his, you know, what happened with the Bad Batch here. And it does feel like this weight is lifted. I'm sure like moments of tension will come up again in the future for Crosshair, but with the Bad Batch, it really feels like this was a turning point. And I think seeing the argument between him and Hunter was so great in the beginning, talking about the angst when Hunter is asking Crosshair, you know, how did you get on the Empire's bad side? Did you betray them like you betrayed us? And I think you can really see on Crosshair's face the, like you were talking about, the guilt that he feels and that he doesn't know how to tell Hunter that Hunter was ultimately right about their place in the Empire. He says that at the end, but here in this moment, it's what he wants to say, but he doesn't know how to admit it to Hunter. And then we get this great conversation between Hunter and Crosshair about Omega. And, you know, Crosshair is saying, like, you know, no one is talking about the fact that I literally risked everything to warn you that they were going to get Omega. And she went through what she did because of you. And it's so biting because Crosshair knows that this is what Hunter cares about more than anything. And I think now for Crosshair, this is also what he cares about more than anything. I'm ready to say that about Crosshair. I think everyone wants to be Omega's favorite. And I think that's what we're kind of seeing with Hunter and Crosshair in this moment, because I thought this was interesting. When Crosshair is telling Hunter that, you know, I warned you, I risked everything to give you this warning, and you still got Omega captured and sent to Tantus. He doesn't bring up that, like, I feel like he could have also said, you also got Tech killed. Like, it's because of your leadership. Omega got captured and Tech got killed too on your watch. And I'm kind of assuming that he knows the full story. I think he does, but he didn't bring that up here. It's just about Omega and what Omega went through in this situation. That's what Crosshair is making Hunter feel guilty about. And I don't think it's because Crosshair is like trying to manipulate Hunter. I think that's actually what his priority here is. He hates that Omega got sent to Tantus. And I think he feels really strongly about that now. And this is where I wanted to talk about the season one finale, because mm-hmm. in the season one finale, Crosshair is talking, his feelings are that the Bad Batch betrayed him. When they're having their standoff, Crosshair says, "You weren't loyal to me. I was one of you. You may have forgotten, but I haven't, which is why I'm going to give you another chance that give you the chance you never get." Sorry. "Which is why I'm going to give you what you never gave me, a chance." It's very much, Crosshair has always been really bummed that they were all separated. But here he's not talking like Hunter even says, "Did you betray them like you betrayed us?" Hunter or Crosshair doesn't even bring that up anymore. It's like, it's all about Omega. Like, you're the one that got her captured. I warned you and she still got hurt, which I think is such a shift from what he was saying in season one. And a detail of the season one finale I'd actually forgotten about was that Crosshair actually tries to get Omega off of Kamino for her safety. And he tells Hunter that Omega doesn't belong with them. He says, quote, "Living among fugitives where she's in constant danger. You want to protect the kid, then let her go. Stop pretending to be something you're not, Hunter. We're not like the Regs. We never have been. We're superior. The Empire can't protect the galaxy without strength. This is what we're made for. Think of all we could do together. We were brothers once. We can be again." And I think it's such a shift into what we see Crosshair saying here in season three in the Outpost. It really is. I think obviously he's still hurt about everything that happened with the Bad Batch, but his priorities have shifted. And I think it's clear what he cares about. He, of course, at the end of the episode, you know, essentially tells Hunter that he was right. But here in this moment, you know, it's like, what's the saying of like, want to know what people care about? What do they talk about the most?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so interesting to compare. I also think something that I want to note is there's a feeling that Crosshair has let go, which is the superiority that he felt towards mm-hmm. himself and the Bad Batch as a whole, honestly, towards other clones. And it's what you were saying before, honestly. I just want to hammer it home that this is a really good comparison point of how Crosshair thought of himself as better. And last season was really about how him getting like taken down a peg about, no, the Empire does not see you as better than the same way that the Republic saw you guys as like a specialized force. It's not how it was at all. And he in season one definitely was holding on to that, which I sort of understand. Like, I understand that perspective, which is why Crosshair was such a good character, is that he had to unpack a lot of things. And I just want to take a step back and comment on the fact that Caitlin and I, throughout our entire time talking about The Bad Batch, talking about Star Wars for 7 years on a podcast, and being a fan for way longer, watching The Clone Wars from episode one, day one in the movie, like, we've been here for a while. We have never been this freaking attached to clones. So, and I think that Crosshair, talking about Crosshair and like his relationship to the clones and everything, it just puts it into perspective about how rich this story has been. Mm-hmm. It was rich in the Clone Wars. It really was. The clone story was rich in the Clone Wars. Like, of course it was. But the Bad Batch has really expanded on it so much that we get such deep character dynamics. And I think to go to our speculation about how this will end, and if it does end with some sort of freedom from Tantus, from experimentation, from something like that, like, for some reason in my brain, I'm thinking about, I don't know if you saw this, but I know that there are a lot of people who are listening who did, but Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 really dealt with like science experiments and like bad guys mm-hmm. being terrible to science experiments, and it really kind of blew up the whole thing with Rocket Raccoon. And I'm, again, not one to compare Star Wars to Marvel. This is not a thing. This movie did a really good job, though, about talking about animal testing and things like that. And I think that there's a, like, what I'm trying to get at is I think there's a really rich story there about, like, what ultimate freedom for the clones post Clone Wars within the Empire, like, it looks like. They're not experimentations. They're people. And we've been saying that for the past couple seasons, but I think that there's an opportunity there to hammer it home. And also for this realization for the Bad Batch, especially for Crosshair, to have this like incredible character arc where he realizes that he's not superior, that these people are not superior just because they have the genetic differences or whatever, that everyone deserves a chance for brotherhood, for family, for love. It's like ultimately what Star Wars is. Yeah, I feel like that was a big ramble, but I really like this comparison point. And it's just like, damn, we've really come so far.
We've come so far. I really could not have anticipated my feelings for all of these characters.
Basically, I just have to say, Caitlin and I were talking about last night, actually. This is really dark. I just want everyone to say. We were like, oh, we don't know what's going to happen at the end, right? So we're talking about this. We're speculating. We're throwing out ideas. This is what Caitlin and I do, okay? And we're like, wonder how it's going to end. Like, and I'm like, I maintain that I think we're going to get a happy ending with melancholy and some sort of sacrifice. Caitlin immediately goes, oh my God, what does that mean in terms of sacrifice? Like, you say sacrifice, but like, who's dying? Right. And I'm like, I don't know if it necessarily means death. Like, I think it could mean some sort of sacrifice. Like, maybe Omega goes off on her own or something. Like, I don't know, like some sort of separation maybe. Or like the Marauder blows up, or we lose the sight of home, or like we have to give up Pabu. Like, I don't know, something like that. I think we're going to have some sort of sacrifice. It's not equal to like the tech sacrifice. Okay. But this is what I just think. And then it sort of got us on the conversation about like, who would be the most sad from the Bad Batch if they didn't make it to the end of the series.
So dark.
And what happened was we were like, equal sadness for everyone.
equal
devastation. And for me, that said so much about my feelings towards this group of clones that I met on the final season of the Clone Wars, where I was more excited to see Anakin and Ahsoka again.
Yeah.
And I kind of like didn't care about these clones, like genuinely. And now here we are, like, I will need to take time off of work if that happens in the end.
I just, equal sadness. Yeah.
Equal sadness.
I think, you know, you play out the speculation of like, okay, what would it mean if so-and-so was gone, if so-and-so, like so on and so forth, which I think is what they did when they talked about losing Tech in season 2. Yeah. And obviously a very dark conversation. But yeah, I think the takeaway for us really was, like, it's all going to be 100% sadness, and I don't know what I'll do if that happens. And just about like our love of these characters, I was listening to our episode of the Clone Wars Bad Batch episode, and we like it's a good Skytalkers episode, don't get me wrong, but we spend so much of it talking about like the war, the Clone Wars in general, the setting, Rex, and I think I only listened to like the first hour or something, but we really hadn't even dived into like the characters of the Bad Batch and what we thought about them. And I was like, past Caitlin and Charlotte don't even know how attached and obsessed we would be to these characters. And I know we've talked about our relationship to the clones and the clone story before, but it's just such a testament to how good this series is and how it's just really touched something, I think, in us and really made us like open up to honestly a whole world of the Star Wars galaxy that we weren't necessarily super a part of in the same way that we were like the Jedi. So I don't know. I'm like I said, I'm feeling some kind of way about the series ending, and I'm really going to miss these characters, and we're getting so far ahead of ourselves. We're not even halfway through the season yet. I'm so sorry, but that's probably what we're going to be talking about too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was rewatching parts of season 1, or I rewatched all of season 1. I guess I'll segue us back into the actual conversation about the episode.
Sorry.
Thank you. I just wanted the record to show that Charlotte took us down this dark path, not me.
I did. Well, Yeah.
But I, also in thinking about the ending of the series, I found it really interesting that, you know, the last shots of season one of The Bad Batch, of the finale, the last shots are of Crosshair and Omega. If you remember, Crosshair ultimately rescues Omega when she's basically drowning on Kamino. He's the one that rescues her out of the boat or out of the water at the end. And then Crosshair and Hunter and Wrecker and Tech have a conversation about how, you know, they're still going to go their separate ways. And, you know, the Bad Batch leave kind of upset about that. And then it's just Omega standing there looking at her destroyed home, and Crosshair, who isn't going to come with them as much as she, even in that moment, wants him to. And we have Hunter standing on the Marauder looking at Crosshair and Omega on the platform, on the landing platform. And I don't know, it kind of makes me think about, like, now that we're here in season three and there's a really big emphasis on Crosshair and Omega again, and what that kind of means for what the finale looks like. And I think you had kind of mentioned this when we were talking about a different approach, but about the fact that Omega and Crosshair are able to have success there together, like through their plans and their skill sets, mm-hmm. and what that could mean for the finale, because they've been on Tantus together, so they have a different understanding of that space than like everyone else. So I don't know, I wonder if there's some kind of parallel to the season one finale that we'll see in the season three finale too.
Intriguing. Yeah. Crosshair and Omega have always had a connection, a relationship mm-hmm. that feels different than everyone else's. And I think we've already seen it basically pay off in the beginning of the season, but will it continue to pay off? I think it will, because
yeah.
sort of it's very clear what you were saying about how Crosshair's focus really has been Omega. Yeah.
Oh, let's also, one like cute Crosshair line that we didn't talk about earlier in the episode is when Hunter obviously doesn't want Omega to go to the outpost. And again, we just see Hunter kind of be stoic when he passes Omega, and Crosshair immediately picks up on it. And he says, don't hold it against him. He's only worried about you. And Omega says, you don't think I should go either. And Crosshair says this great line where he says, you're capable, but you are still a kid. And then, you know, Omega says the great line of, I'm older than you are, little brother. And we get a Crosshair laugh, which iconic.
Perfection. We also, the toothpicks are back.
The toothpick is back.
He's in full form, guys. He's like, Crosshair is fully back.
We're so back.
The
baby.
Vulture is gone. We are so back.
He's even in his armor. It's like, it's a moment.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the armor of it all. Yeah. Oh my God. When Wrecker was like, we couldn't bring her. Oh, what did he say? He said, it didn't feel right to throw it out or get rid of it, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It never felt right to get rid of it. Oh my God. Like, yeah, we know. I don't know. Like, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, it's great. I loved Crosshair's line of being like, one, he's essentially defending Hunter to Omega, which this is at the beginning of the episode, which is kind of definitely not where Hunter and Crosshair are emotionally with each other. And he says that he's worried about Omega when clearly Crosshair is too. But I love him saying, like, you're capable, but you're still a kid. And someone on Twitter had actually pointed out parallels between this episode and earlier episodes of The Bad Batch. And Tech says something very similar to Omega as well about her being capable and like having a good skill set and things like that. So I just love the encouragement of Omega. And then again, it's the difference between Crosshair and Hunter. Like, Hunter's like, no, you can't come. Whereas I don't think Crosshair, I mean, she obviously ends up going, but, you know, in episode four, Crosshair's like, all right, let's do what Omega's saying. Also, I want to point out too that Batcher clearly favors Crosshair over everyone else. And
like, of course she does.
I know. Someone on Twitter commented too that it was like, Crosshair is the dad that didn't want the dog that is then the best dog's best friend.
Right.
It's just
so good.
It's so good. And I feel like
also.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Also, did you see how Batcher is like BFFs with Gonki. And we've gotten a tiny bit of Gonki content throughout these couple, like the beginning of the season. I'm so glad that Gonki, first of all, I love Gonki. You know that. I love Gonki. I'm looking at my Gonk droid on my desk right now.
Yeah.
But I just like, we don't get enough Gonki content. We've gotten a little bit like Wrecker like strapping Gonki to his back upside and things down. Like that. But upside down. Yeah, that was a little, I was a little offended.
I was like, is all the blood right rushing to his head?
Yeah, I know. The Gonk blood. I feel like, anyway, but it's very clear that Batcher loves Gonki. And guess what? Now Gonki has a BFF and Batcher also has a BFF. Like it's great. We're so glad we're here.
It's,
you know,
so good. It's so good.
The Marauder's getting crowded.
Yeah, they have to get a little villa on Paboo. So... with their own raw edge table. Who makes that? Shep? Fee? Where's the source? Where's the sourcing coming from?
It's Shep.
It's Shep, it's for yeah. Sure Shep. Yeah, in his in his free time from being mayor of this paradise, he's right. Also a woodcarver.
I love
it.
Which
wouldn't surprise me, honestly. I feel like I can feel this kind of nearing the end of our conversation here, but some other little tidbits I just wanted to mention. I meant to say this when we were talking about why come to the outpost in the first place, but I love the parallel of the first time Crosshair is returning from his adventure on the outpost with Mayday when Mayday is, you know, about to die. This is when he loses Mayday at this juncture. But now we see the opposite of him returning with Hunter after their ordeal with the ice worm. And clearly they have turned a new leaf. Obviously they survived. So I love that parallel. And then we get a little bit of Echo and Omega in this episode, which I have such a soft spot for the Echo and Omega relationship. I feel like, you know, I've definitely been critical in the past of like how Omega's relationships are developing with each of the Bad Batch. And I feel like she doesn't get that much time with Echo, obviously, like from middle of season two, he left. But I feel like he always has these great little conversations with her that, I don't know, just
agree.
Say a lot without having to spend so much time with them. Like when he's wise enough to tell her to let Hunter and Crosshair figure it out. And then this beautiful little conversation between them at the end of, you know, her feeling like she hasn't done enough to help the clones on Tantus, and Echo saying, you did. Like, we've got new information. And hey, also, your job was to escape. That was your mission. And you did it. And you did a good job. And I don't know. I just, that like warmed my heart a little. Like, yeah, that was her mission to survive. And she succeeded. And I love that Echo called that out for her. And I feel like he always has those little moments with her where he's like, you're doing a good job, kid. Like, don't ever forget it. Because I think that Omega really looks up to Echo in a way she doesn't the rest of the Bad Batch, because he is like, he's the one fulfilling his purpose. And we talk about this so much with the Bad Batch of what their purpose is. And Echo is that person in Omega's life who was actually doing it. I rewatched the scene where he leaves the Bad Batch and he's telling Omega that he's leaving. And she's obviously really sad about it because she wants them all to be together. And he tells her, you know, I have to do this. This is something I have to do. I have to go help Rex with the other clones. And I think that's a really great example for Omega to have someone like that in her life who, number one, is like following their purpose. And number two is also coming back, right? Like, how lucky are we that Echo continues to be the story with us and with Omega? I don't know. I really love the two of them together. I think they have a great relationship.
Also, not to mention, Echo was the newbie to the Bad Batch,
the reg.
Right? Yeah. And then Omega was the next newbie. So they both have that in common where they're separate from like the OG crew, and they've always sort of bonded over that. I think to your point about seeing someone go off and fulfill their own personal mission at being a good example for Omega is sort of how I slyly mentioned when we were speculating about like the end of the season, how I think that will look. I wonder if Omega is going to somehow go off on her own. I mean, she is older than everyone else. It makes me wonder, you know, this conviction that Omega could possibly have about something that she feels like she needs to do separate from these other guys, you know? Ugh. Who knows what we're going to see.
Yeah.
But when you were talking about the example that Echo shows, I was like,
I know. Curious. It could go in so many ways. And just, I feel like it's definitely going to be a bittersweet pill for us at the end a little bit. So I don't know. And then I think it's worth it to read the quote of what Crosshair says to Hunter finally at the end. He says, "Hunter, I thought I knew what I was getting into with the Empire. I thought I was being a good soldier." And Hunter responds, "Nobody really understood what was happening back then." Crosshair says, "I've done things, I've made mistakes." And then Hunter finishes it out saying, "I have regrets too, Crosshair. All we can do is keep trying to be better. And who knows, there just might be hope for us yet." And like true siblings, there doesn't even need to be an "I'm sorry" in here. It's just this is Hunter or Crosshair admitting, you know, he was wrong about the Empire, and Hunter accepts it. I don't know. It's just it was like we finally made it to that point, right? And then the ice vulture flies away, right? Like this is what was supposed to happen, you know?
Yeah, this is Star Wars. Mm-hmm. This kind of that quote, "All we can do is to keep it. All we can do is keep trying to be better, and who knows, there just might be hope for us yet." Like, that's why I like Star Wars, this ability to constantly change your path. And whether or not other people accept you is a different question, but we have this answer of acceptance here in this story. And I love that there is that we have this conversation, that the conversation ends this way, that so good.
It's so good. And we're so lucky that there is time for these characters to be together after the quote unquote redemption of Crosshair. You know, it hasn't ended in death. It's not a sacrifice. That they have time to like refigure out how to work together as a crew.
So good. These two episodes were bangers, like absolute bangers.
Absolute bangers. Absolutely. Love them so much. Well, is there anything else you want to add about these two episodes?
Nope, that's it.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait for our next set of Bad Batch discussions. They'll be coming, I don't have the date in front of me, but in the next 2 weeks, I think.
So, on our social media, probably by now, there will be a chart up of our schedule. Yeah. So you can check that.
I'll check it too. Because I don't remember off the top of my head right now. But thank you guys, as always, for listening. We really appreciate it. And we really love that you give us the opportunity to be a part of your Star Wars experience. It really does mean a lot to us. So if you would like to talk about Star Wars some more with us online, you can find us on Twitter or X at SkytalkersPod, or our personal handles. Mine is at Caitlin Plusher and Charlotte's is at Crarity. We also have our website, skytalkers.com, our Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, our email, all good places to find us. And if you have a couple of seconds and would like to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, it helps other people find our show and other ways to get in touch with us. You can also take a screenshot of you listening to the episode and share in real time on your social media platform of choice and tag us that you're listening, and we'll be sure to repost it wherever you tagged us on it. And if you're interested in other ways to support our show and how to get involved in our wonderful Discord community, you can head on over to our Patreon and check out our reward tiers there.
I want to say a huge thank you to these patrons: Nina, Imbecilius, Megan, Emma, Jose, Justin, Christina, Nick, Charlotte, Alexa, Molly, Tom, Anna, BB, Nate, David, Eugene, Kat, Cassie, Gary, Pam, and Jonah. Thank you so much for supporting us.
Yes, thank you guys so much. And until next time, may the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you. We'll be right back.